I call this meeting to order of the Subcommittee on Mining, Forestry, and Tourism, the date being Wednesday, January 25th. We have quorum. The agenda today, we're going to be going through a few overviews, kind of the state of forestry in the state of Minnesota. I appreciate you guys braving the dramatic 1 inch of snow that we received here in the Twin Cities metro area. Mr. Director Bo, if you'd like to introduce yourself and who you're with, and we'll get the committee started. Thanks for coming.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name's Forrest Bo. I'm the Director of Forestry with the DNR and also the State Forester.
Mr. Bo, would you get into the mic a little bit better? It's a little bit tough to hear. Some of us are involved in the shooting sports.
Okay. So we'll make that happen. All right, well, thank you for the opportunity. Really appreciate being here today. And there's four of us here today. We're going to talk a little bit about the industry here in Minnesota. I've got a little bit of an overview on some of the industry facts and figures. I'll talk a little bit about DNR's forest management, talk a little bit about how we're working with private forest landowners, and also just about things that we're watching and monitoring, things we're kind of concerned about. So just give you a very brief overview, and then I'll have the other folks come up and share their presentations with you as well. So who owns the forest in Minnesota? That's one of the early questions, right? And the chart on the left is really depicting who owns that forest. You can see the state owns and manages about 24% private and tribal industry lands, of course, make up the majority. We got some federal lands, and the state or counties have 15% of the acreage. We're very unique in the Lake States in that we have this kind of a mix. The western states are normally all federal lands, and the southern states are generally private lands. So we have a very unique mixture of landowners here in the state. I wanted to point out that even though we have in the state lands, even though we have, you know, 4.2 million acres, we look at this as forest land. And so forest land is a little bit different than timberland. Timberland is what we would call things that are commercially harvested. So about half of our lands are not commercially harvested. They're peatlands, they're wetlands, those kinds of things. So the acreage does jump around quite a bit with that. The pie chart on the right shows kind of the mixture of species we have here in Minnesota. As you can see, aspen is one of our largest species, takes up about 30%, and then a good mixture of other things here in Minnesota. Aspen is really the preferred wood by most of our industry here in Minnesota because of its qualities. And you see some species, I'll point out tamarack. We have a lot of it. Really isn't much market for tamarack. They use a little bit of it for firewood. Some of the mills are starting to put a little bit of tamarack in their mix, but we have a vast supply of tamarack with really not much for markets. All right. I wanted to show this slide, and this is about all harvest in the state. So statewide harvest, not just DNR harvest, not just federal land harvest, but harvest on all lands in the state. So back in the mid to late 80s, there was a great expansion by the forest industry. Actually, so much so that that in 1990, the state decided to do a generic environmental impact statement because of that expansion. The GEIS examined several levels of statewide harvest. And originally they identified four levels. The base level, which is the green line, was about the level of harvest that was happening at the time we started this GEIS back in 1990. They also looked at a 4.9 million cord level of harvest in the state. Again, all ownerships. And the reason they looked at 4.9 is because that's what the mills were planning to do for expansions. There's a lot of movement in the industry, and everyone had a plan. They were expanding, and so that was the level that the GEIS looked at. The GEIS also looked at a 7 million cord level, and ultimately at the end determined that that level of harvest was not sustainable. The GEIS was completed in 1994, and in the end, the purple line, that 5.5 million cords of harvest, was estimated to be the maximum sustainable harvest in Minnesota. Again, all ownerships. The GEIS also looked at mitigation strategies for these various levels. So there were things that were put in place to safeguard against various levels of harvest. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute or two. Of course, things haven't really played out the way that people had projected. The statewide harvest really peaked in 1991 at about 4 million cords, declined after that, really bounced around 3.8 million cords, and following the recession in 2006, declined by over a million cords, and it's kind of where we're at today, at about 2.8 million cords harvested off of all ownerships. And that decline was primarily due to the closure of six quite large mills. I think of a mill in Deerwood. There was one in Bemidji, Grand Rapids, and Cook. The Verso plant in Sartell burned, and they chose not to put that up again, and also a plant in Duluth. So we did lose a lot of industry right around that time. However, even though we did lose some industry, industry in Minnesota is still quite strong. As a matter of fact, these are the latest official data from 2013. We're still harvesting 2.6 million cords. Actually, in 2013, there was an additional 300,000 cords of firewood that was harvested. So the official number there for 2013 was 2.8 million cords. DNR share of that is that particular year was 861,000 cords. But like I had said, even despite those downsides and closing of some mills, forest industry is still the fifth largest manufacturing industry in the state, supporting over 63,000 jobs and $16 billion in economic impact, and a lot of state and local taxes generated by the mills, the workers, and everything that goes on with that. So we're very fortunate to have a good industry in the state. I wanted to talk a little bit about where DNR gets its direction for forest management. So now I'm strictly talking about DNR. Many of the slides previously were about all of the state's forests, whether they be in private or other public ownership, but really a brief overview of where we get our direction. So DNR gets direction in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 88, and really it's our direction around how we put out fires and how we assist private landowners or prevent fires. Chapter 89 is about how we're supposed to manage for multiple uses, and multiple uses are recreation, wildlife habitat, biodiversity, rare and endangered species, production of clean water, timber, solitude. All of those things are considered in that multiple use. In addition to managing for multiple uses, we also manage in multiple land statuses. And when I talk about land statuses, about half of the land that DNR manages is managing trust lands for the schools. We also manage CONCON lands, or consolidated conservation lands. And those are lands where we do the work, the timber harvesting, and we share the profits 50-50 with the counties. So there's a good number of CONCON lands. And, of course, we have acquired lands where we have acquired the lands through gift or just outright purchase, and that's certainly the smallest piece of that. Chapter 89A is our Sustainable Forest Resources Act. It really talks about how we need to pursue sustainability when we manage forests and achieve the state's economic goals, our environmental goals, and our social goals. Chapter 89 is one of those areas that this is actually the Sustainable Forest Resources Act of 1995. So remember I had suggested that the GEIS was completed in 1994. Chapter 89 is one of the mitigations that came out of that. And so as part of that mitigation, it creates the Minnesota Forest Resources Council. It also creates the site-level forest management guidelines, our best management practices that we implement, and also created this multi-landowner landscape planning so that we can all do this planning of our forests together in a coordinated way. And Chapter 89 is really about the laws and rules around appraising and selling state timber. So that's where we get our direction. This map really provides a quick overview of some of the major land types. The map on the right shows where our 59 state forests are located. And you can see that where these are located, the state forest land, we have a lot of land that's actually outside of a state forest, so we have some scattered lands as well, but generally speaking, we have a boundary around these state forests. We don't own all the land inside that boundary. There's a lot of private land. There's a lot of county land. There's other types of land within the boundary. But for statutory reasons, we have identified a boundary. And out of those 59 state forests, our annual cord harvest over the years is roughly around 800,000 cords and really supplies about 30% of the state's fiber that's used by our mills. So we're a major contributor. By the way, I wanted to mention our forests in the state forests are dual certified, and so we're certified by both the Sustainable Forestry Incentive and also the Forestry Stewardship Council. It's a third-party auditing to make sure that we're managing according to the right principles of sustainability. Pretty proud of that certification. We're the largest certified owner in the United States, and we've been certified for over a decade, so another good thing. And I think that particular item is very important for mills as well. I think Mr. Brandt will talk about how that certification is important. A little bit about land ownership. Really one more map for you, and the map is just to depict some ownership patterns. And you can see the various ownerships there, the tribal lands, the county lands, the federal lands, state lands. And really this is about it's just a mixture out there. It's a patchwork. It's a quilt of many colors. And, you know, we all work together. The DNR, the Forest Service, the counties, we all depend on each other, and our road systems go across each other's land, so it's very important that we work together. For our DNR road network, we have over 2,300 miles of roads, we have dozens of bridges and thousands of culverts. Imagine taking care of a system like that. One would think that this road system might be built or used for logging. We've done some surveys on that. 90% of our road system use is for recreation. So the logging is in and out for certain areas, short periods of time, but the road system is there to provide access to wildlife, for hunting, fishing, all of those kinds of things. So very important to the general public, the road system here in Minnesota. I want to talk about this is state ownership, and for the past 15 years, our annual cord target has been has been 800,000 cords, and this level of harvest has been set based on a number of modeling exercises and back about 15 years ago, really about what our plans were able to generate. We do forest planning for all of our forests, so that's where we had gotten that goal target. We're in the midst of another sustainability harvest study. We've been hearing from some folks that we're harvesting too much. We're hearing from some folks that we're not harvesting enough. And we agree it is time to do another sustainable harvest analysis. and I'll be talking with this committee or the finance committee about that in the future. We have already, we have an RFP out to hire an independent modeler. We've done our own modeling. Other people have done modeling. We think it's good to have an independent look at what the sustainable harvest should be on DNR lands. We've created a stakeholder advisory group, a very diverse set of stakeholders. We've got the deer hunters on there, rough grouse.
Thank you. Just a quick question of clarification. So that the past analysis, when we went over that previous, was the estimated maximum. So when you do an analysis of this, the one that's going to come up, is that only going to be for DNR lands, or is it going to be for all land analysis for sustainability?
Mr. Chair, great question. It will be for DNR lands.
Okay.
Correct. And the analysis is really to understand if 1 million cords is sustainable, is a sustainable harvest level off of state lands. And if that isn't, what would the right number be?
Representative Lewick, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Bo, that new look, is that going to take into consideration that we've got a lot of new potential uses for wood stock, cellulosic? Obviously, what drives that market is what we're doing with that wood, and there are some new, potentially new uses that are coming to bear here that are different than what we have in the past, and they have to do with really processing this wood down to chemicals and extracting that type of stuff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, we'll look at what is a sustainable harvest level from all of our species. And a lot of the things you mentioned, you know, are very specific to certain species that they're going to use. So we would have that number of what is sustainable from state lands, all species. And as I had mentioned before, you know, we have a tamarack resource that we're not using much of right now. Hopefully someone can find a good use for some of that fiber as well.
Thank you, Representative Brooke. Yeah, this is very important that we make sure that we blend that look at sustainability and how that the current use affects very specific species, because that over time changes, and with some of the new technology coming, it definitely can hopefully will shift the market, expand it, not shift it to new areas.
Director Ball.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lewick. As I was mentioning, we have a very diverse set of a group of people that are helping us or providing us advice on this sustainability analysis. Again, our goal is to determine if a million cords is sustainable off of state lands. During this period, while we're doing the sustainability analysis, Governor Dayton has instructed us to offer 900,000 cords or an extra 100,000 cords over our previous goals. So we'll be meeting that over the next 2 years while we do that analysis.
Director Bo, Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you just answered my question in your last statement. Simple question of the timing, and it sounds like it's going to take 2 years.
Director Bo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, we hope to be done about next year at this time.
Okay, so another year.
Representative Lehman?
I am encouraged to hear that it's not going to take 2 years. I know people are really anxious about increasing the harvest, and for a lot of reasons, potential new uses as well as controlling the price, making sure that the demand doesn't outpace the available wood.
Director Bolt, Representative Lehman, anything else?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you.
All right. Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Bolt, thank you for this report so far. On the planned cords and offered cords, it's kind of a little striking there. The last 2 years it shows more offered cords. The governor directed the DNR to go to 900,000 cords. So from what I've been led to understand by different parties, that's all fine and good, but it's a lot of sales that were not taken in the past. a lot of, I guess you could say, quote, garbage wood that the DNR hasn't been able to move. Is there any, can you comment on that?
Director Bowe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eklund, yeah, the graphic on the actually shows 15 and 16, and so we were able to offer more wood than we actually had planned for the last couple of years, and that's due to some blowdowns that we had. Good to get that wood cleaned up, good those forests back into production, and the industry can use that extra wood. As far as for the next 2 years, I think we're in pretty good shape to meet those goals, and it won't be garbage wood. We think the market might be able to take some of those lands that maybe have been marginal in the past, but we're looking at accelerating our management of ash in anticipation of emerald ash borer. We've gotten the signal from some of the industry that they're willing to take more ash. Normally, ash isn't a huge component of what they want to take, but they're signaling that they'll take some more, so we're going to put up more, and that'll be, you know, good cords and good boards.
Representative Eklund?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe I should apologize to the rest of the committee a little bit on the garbage wood statement. That's an industry term for stuff that is not necessarily the best thing that they can put on the market. And Director Bowe talked about the blowdown, and that's what I was referring to, that kind of stuff, because it's that wood is more expensive for the producers to get in and get out, because it's more dangerous, and some of it just isn't usable once they do cut it. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sundin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Bowe. If you could comment for a minute on accessibility to this wood, that additional cords that we can sell. How about accessibility? You know, do we have the road system in place? I understand a lot of this is would be winter wood, and with the winter season shrinking on us, we've got a problem for people that are out there trying to harvest that wood. In some counties, they were down to just a few weeks of harvesting wood last winter. Can you comment on the accessibility to this wood we're about to sell?
Director Bowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, we have a road system in place. We also have a plan to expand that road system, a plan that we've had for the last number of years. We know where we would like to build new road. We know where roads need to be upgraded to provide better access and get the wood out of the woods. We've not been able to implement that plan up to this point, but we are making some progress. Two years ago, the forest industry was able to secure an additional $500,000 of road money for the DNR, and we made significant progress. I think we had 43 projects statewide that allowed us to upgrade our road system so that we had longer hauling periods, you know, with load restrictions and all of those kinds of things, and even just the shape of our roads, we're able to extend that that hauling season. So providing better access will certainly help that. I would point out that about 70% of the wood that's harvested from state land comes in the winter months, frozen ground, and that has something to do with the kind of ground the state got through history. Certainly private land and federal land are much better quality lands and probably have even better access, much better access than state lands, but certainly doing our best to make sure those that wood is accessible.
Representative Sundin, follow up?
Thank you, though. I'm good for now.
All right. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bowe, I'm curious, what percentage of the sales are off managed timber, managed plantations?
Director Bowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I am guessing around 10%. I could get that for you exactly. And so what Representative Clark is referring to is pine is usually a plantation in many cases. We have, I want to say, about 80,000 acres, maybe, of pine plantation, and the rest is just more natural forest.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you.
Just one other question. When it comes to Director Bowe, some of the construction of the roads, obviously you've come to the state and asked for requested dollars. Kind of what partnerships have you worked with kind of the private sector? Have you explored any of those as far as when it comes to pricing models to the quarters that you're allowing, maybe from decreased quarters of allotments to allow for some of that expansion of the road system? Have you explored some of those as far as funding options?
Mr. Chair, we have partnered significantly with both the other government agencies, be it the county, the federal government, and the state in this road system, because the map I showed you before, these roads crisscross everyone's ownership and really is of benefit for everyone, all forest landowners, to have a good road system. As far as the private landowners go, we've done some cooperating with the industrial private landowners. The individual private landowners, of course, are maybe not as willing to assist with that, but certainly would look for any opportunity. And in many cases, we need to cross their land with an easement, and so we certainly are cooperating that way, where we trade easements with the private landowners so they can get their wood out and we can get our wood out as well.
Thank you, Director Bowe. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, I was wondering, do we have any numbers that would tell how many acres of these forested lands are planted every year?
Director Bowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, we do. We need to do about 10,000 acres, roughly, of reforestation every year, and that would include both planting and seeding. We harvest about 40,000 acres a year. 30,000 of those acres are forests that just naturally come back after resprouting. Aspen, think aspen. But a lot of the conifers, oak doesn't nearly do as good. Black walnut doesn't nearly do as good. Those kinds of things need to be planted, mainly the conifers and spruce.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you.
All right. Why don't you continue with your presentation, Mr. Bowe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think overall, you know, forest industry really provides us this opportunity and at an affordable price, large scale. It's a tool that allows us to manage our land. Without forest industry, we need money to manage these lands and to meet all the habitat needs. And industry really allows us to create this ongoing, constantly evolving forest and forest conditions that we desire. And I would also suggest that our desires change over time. You know, we want different things out of our forest, whether we want different kinds of wildlife or more wildlife or various things. And industry allows us and facilitates that that change. It also allows us to respond to forest health issues like insect and disease and those kinds of things. What I wanted to show here was really where did that fallout happen. If you remember, I talked about, you know, our harvest level at 4 million in 1991 and then dropping off to 2006 to about 3.5 and maybe now down to 2.8. Where did that come from? How did that happen? And what this slide really shows is that the state land harvest has been level over the years. County land harvest has been pretty level over the years. Industry lands, even federal land harvest has been level over the years. But what's dropped off is the private land harvest. And, you know, steady is good, right? Steady is good for businesses. Businesses need some confidence in supply and in order to make investments. And so I think the public land managers have really provided that steady pace. But the private lands has certainly dropped off. So why was that? Well, you can see from this slide that it's probably not due to stumpage price. And so what I'm depicting here with the slide, and this I actually got the slide from Dr. Kilgore, who you're going to hear from in just a few minutes. You can see the family forest timber supply in the blue line and how that has declined over the years. actually down to around 800,000 cords most recently, coming off from a high of over 2 million cords coming off those family forest lands. The green line is the DNR's private forest management activity. So back in the peak in 1993, we had 43 FTEs that were helping private landowners manage their forest. And so I would suggest that those lines correlate quite well in, as we declined our effort through budget reductions over the years, the family forest owner has also been declining in their production or what's ending up coming to market. So it's really about assistance. And I would suggest that we're not the only ones that were providing that assistance. Industry had private foresters out there doing work, but because of reductions in their business, they had backed that off as well. And again, at its peak of timber prices, the private land supply was dropping significantly.
Director Bowe, Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Bowe, two questions on that. First, on we allocated money last year for private forest management. I would at some point in time like to see the report on where the DNR is at with that, because it is a critical stage. And then on the second part of that is, a lot of the soil and water conservation districts are also hiring foresters now. Is the DNR going to be able to work in conjunction with those SWCDs on private forest management?
Mr. Chair, Representative Oakland, I'll answer the second question first. Absolutely. We work hand-in-hand with those SWCD foresters. Even though they work for the county, we involve them on our committees. We have really good working relationships with them. The slide after next, I have a slide about our PFM accomplishments, so I think I can address all of those questions after the following slide, if that's okay.
It's fine.
Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the second part of it is that my question is on the federal lands. As you probably know, I work in a paper mill, so I've dealt with these for a long time, but is the Good Neighbors Program going to be successful? I know there's been some sales that the DNR has done. Do you see that as a growing partnership with the Forest Service? And I've talked to the Superior manager, and she is optimistic on it, but I know there's a lot of things that they have to get their arms around, too.
Director Bowe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eklund, the Good Neighbor Authority allows the state to put up timber on federal lands and basically use our labor force and our systems to sell that land. We have a smaller role of red tape when it comes to selling timber and offering timber and marking timber, all of those kinds of things. And so I think there's a lot of efficiencies to gain. We've seen from Michigan and Wisconsin that they've been very successful in the Good Neighbor Authority. Lots of boards and cords being put up by their state partners. We are in our second year of a pilot program here in Minnesota. We have a small handful of timber sales that we have done for the Forest Service. None of those have been cut yet, but they have been offered. Some of those have been sold, and some of those have actually been passed on because maybe they weren't very good quality. But we will certainly continue to work, and I am also optimistic that that we can do more work with Good Neighbor Authority here in Minnesota.
Representative Eklund? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director, with the decline of the family forest lands, or I'm assuming that's private forest lands, what is the effect? I mean, we've had a major corporation, Potlatch, withdraw from the marketplace in Minnesota with their mills and a lot of their land, at least. Is that included in that graph in terms of the decline of the supply on the private sector?
Director Bowe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, this would be all ownerships, and this family forest timber supply would include those private industrial owners. I would suggest that Potlatch Land Company still remains quite active in selling, marketing their timber in Minnesota, even though they are in the process of selling much of it. But they have been still very, very active in the management of that timber. So I would suggest that this is those private family forest owners.
Representative Uglum?
Oh, that's fine. Thank you.
All right, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to make an anecdote here that I appreciate your comment about the people who serve the small plantations. My dad started a tree farm in 1980, and the gentleman who helped him and really made it, it's still a healthy farm, was a DNR employee. And we always thought it was, the value of that was tremendous. And that has tailed off a lot. He's still there, but he's got a lot less he can do for us. And I find it interesting you're making that correlation. I think you may well be right about that.
Director Bowe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You can continue, I think.
Forest inventory analysis, which is a federal inventory program that is done by the state along in cooperation with the feds, is our only opportunity to look at private land inventory. So the state, we inventory our lands, the county does forest inventory on their lands, and the feds do inventory on their lands. There's no other inventory that's done except for FIA that covers private lands or all lands. And what I just wanted to point out here is that, you know, carry the last graphic over to here. This really solidifies that number, is that, you know, this is the aspen birch cover type and its age class. And what we're suggesting here is that there's probably more aspen and birch over 40 years of age on private land than there is in total on state, county, and federal land. So that is where a lot of this timber exists. And generally speaking, aspen is harvestable at about 40 years of age. So we know that there's a great resource out there. And I think what this also would say is that certainly the state and the counties have been more active because we have more acres in that 0 to 19 years of age class. All right. So far, we've had some great results. You know, we saw the need to have our private forest management outreach invigorated last year, and we were fortunate enough to secure some funding last year in 2016 for a private forest management initiative. Immediately, we were able to hire 14 new foresters. And so far, 354 cost share projects, you know, totaling a whole bunch of money, almost $350,000. Those cost share projects are for timber stand improvement work, some invasive species work. It's cost share to write plans, it's cost share to plant trees. And so a lot of pent-up energy and again, getting out there to create this buzz about forest management on private lands. So far, we've also wrote over 174 forest management plans for individual private landowners, and we found that if a private forest owner has a plan, they're more likely to follow the plan, and much of that plan would include everything from work in their forest on roads or improvement of their forest or harvest of their forest. We continue to monitor, of course, with our forest inventory analysis. One other point I want to make. So far, just in these few short months, we've had 176 harvest referrals to private consultants. So when we work with these private landowners, we aren't the ones putting up these timber permits for them. We refer that to a consultant. So, again, it's very important that we have consultants out there. Those are private consultants, and that's how they can help with this. We know the state can't do it all. We can get a plan, we can create the buzz, then we hand it off to the private consultants. All right. we are concerned about a number of things. And so, you know, this list could be a couple of pages, but I wanted to just pop a few things up. I've got some other things I'm concerned about, including budgets and policy issues and those kinds of things, but I think we'll be back in front of the committee soon to talk about those. So I've left those off the list for today. But what I did want to talk about is some forest health issues that are real and they're facing us, and we need to continue to monitor them and act appropriately. First off, emerald ash borer. This bug, unless we find a cure, will destroy nearly 100% of the ash trees in Minnesota. We have nearly a billion ash trees in Minnesota. 7% of the trees in Minnesota are ash. In communities, in our urban communities, anywhere from 15 to 50% of the trees in our urban areas are ash. This will have a huge impact, not only on the forest, but also in our communities. And it's critical that we stay on top of what we can do with emerald ash borer. Eastern larch beetle. This has killed, it's a bug, it's killed more than 120,000 acres of our tamarack resource. I know we got a huge tamarack resources out there, a couple million acres actually in the state. But this has really been increasing, and we're certainly concerned about it. It's really kind of gone unnoticed in many cases. Who's going out in the middle of those tamarack swamps to even notice? But it's real and having a huge impact on our tamarack resource. Just to be clear, we do not have mountain pine beetle here in Minnesota. We worry that it might come. Mountain pine beetle, I think someone had made reference to the western United States, Colorado. If you've been out there recently, it's devastating, all those forests out there. And we worry that mountain pine beetle would get here. It will eventually probably make its way around to the west coast, up through British Columbia and back down into Canada and around. But more likely, it'll hop a ride somehow and get to Minnesota a little bit faster than that, even though we have, you know, the Department of Agriculture has measures in place that would help alleviate that. But we worry about that. And our red pine, our white pine, our jack pine would be a great host or meal for those kinds of pests. So that's certainly something we worry about. We also worry about the rising timber prices. You know, we've seen things in the past. History has shown what happens when we have rising timber prices. And if loggers and mills aren't profitable, they're not going to be here to help us manage our forest. And that is that's a huge deal. When it comes to insect and disease or for fire or whatever, we've got to be able to react, get that forest back into production, and contribute to the economy and all the other things that Minnesotans like to do, like deer hunt and recreate in a number of forms. So we worry about that. Some of you may remember the days of what we called aspen recycling, where we did not have a market and we paid people to go out in the woods with bulldozers and knock down the aspen and leave it lay so that we could create habitat. We don't want to be in a situation where we've got to pay to do that work. That's certainly... many other states have young forest initiatives. So I think about the eastern U.S. They have a serious issue with not enough young forest. And again, that's because they've lost their inventory. Maybe you've known that we've got a little inconsistent winter harvest weather. We've mentioned that already this morning. And we're certainly concerned about that. I won't go into that anymore. But again, about 70% of the state-owned wood is harvested during those frozen ground seasons. And we're also concerned about the age class distribution and spatial distribution. Our goal is to have forest land that has the best mix of tree species in the right areas and locations across the state so we can provide these multiple values like clean water, clean air, a good level of harvest for the economy, and wildlife habitat. So we're certainly concerned about that, and hopefully that doesn't get out of balance. So, again, that list could go on, but for the sake of time, I think I will be done.
Thank you, Mr. Bowe. Real quickly, gentlemen, Mr. Eklund, Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be quick. I have a bunch of questions written down here, but I'll...
Okay.
First one, we're talking the DNR Forestry Department. How many total employees are in the Forestry Division, Mr. Director Bowe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eklund, around 450 total. About half of those are fire, and about half of those are in timber management. And of course, it's not, you know, everybody has a role in everything, but if you think about it that way, our division has two main focuses. One is timber, the other is fire suppression.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And out of that, how many are in St. Paul and how many are out in the field? Director Bowe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eklund, I think we have 60 or 70 people probably in our St. Paul office. Many of those have statewide responsibilities for, like, our roads program, those kinds of things that actually assist the field. We need that field staff in order to get the work done.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then one final question. Earlier in your presentation, you talked about wildlife habitat. There's a big concern about the moose recovery in Minnesota, and this brings into your fire group, too. There's only two things that'll help moose. Actually, one thing, and it's a disturbance. So either you have it through fire or timber harvest. And so what are the plans as far as moose recovery in especially the Northeast? They're gone in the Northwest, so for the Northeast, Director Bowe.
Director Bowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eklund, you know, we have done a couple of things specifically, probably for moose. I mean, moose recovery plan, you probably have to talk to our wildlife director. But we offered a super permit in the northeastern Minnesota, 25,000 core permit. We had to come to the legislature to get special approval for such a large permit. And it was in an area where we didn't have good markets, but we packaged all these things up, and we did get a logger to take that on. It's a multi-year permit. But again, accelerating that in certain parts of the state where we can do the best for habitat.
Representative Eklund. Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a hardwood mill in my district, so I'm curious about the role of the DNR in supporting the hardwood forest in southern Minnesota.
Director Bowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, we have... we do certainly have a role in that, and we are a supplier of all types of wood. As you know, hardwoods are longer lived. Certainly takes a lot longer to grow those, and in some cases they're actually harder to grow high quality hardwoods. And so many of our forests in the southern part of the state are focused on that high quality hardwood management, and we're certainly a supplier to any mill.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The comment being that I, you know, long concerned that that there's efforts made to maintain that sustainability of that forest as well, because that's a pretty valuable resource where I'm at. So, thank you.
All right. So we're just going to lay out the rest of the day. We're a little bit crunched on time, so we're going to try to get everyone in. So we're going to ask Mr. Weber to come forth with your crew. We're going to try to wrap you up by about 9:20, and then we will have Dr. Kilgore come with his hopefully wrapping about 9:40. So, Representative, if you could kind of keep that in mind, we want to make sure we can hear from everyone that took the time to come before us today. So, with that, Mr. Weber, and would you guys please state your name and who you're with, and we look forward to your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representatives. My name is Mark Weber. I am the Director of the Land and Minerals Department in St. Louis County and the Land Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, my name is Gregory Bernou. I'm the Land Commissioner for Carlton County.
Also, I'm the Chair of the Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners, and that's who we are representing today. So once again, thank you for having us here today. We're going to give you a brief history and introduction to the Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners. And to begin with, we'll show you an ownership map that Forrest Bull had shown you earlier, and you can see that approximately 60% of forest land ownership in Minnesota is what we call state tax forfeited land. It is land that is actually state owned, but it is managed by the counties in which these lands are located. There are 15 counties in northern Minnesota that have active land department programs, active forest management programs, and each county has different amounts of acreage. St. Louis County has approximately 900,000 acres of tax forfeited land, 75,000 acres. So there's a wide range of ownership within those northern counties. Just a brief history, and I'll keep this to St. Louis County, which I'm most familiar with, of course. Back in the 1880s and 1890 up to 1900, it was St. Louis County and northern Minnesota was the center of the white pine lumber industry. In the early 1900s, many of these lands, again, all these lands were once privately owned, and they forfeited to the state for non-payment of taxes. So that was a result of large timber companies buying land, harvesting the timber, and then letting it go forfeit. In our situation, there were a lot of mining lands that were privately owned that went forfeit. Agricultural lands, at one time, there was a big effort to farm some of these areas in northern Minnesota, and it just didn't pan out. So a lot of those acres forfeited. So there was a large amount of land that forfeited as a result of this past history. Back in the late 1970s, early 1980s, the county's land departments began ramping up with professional staff, with good technology. GIS came into play, and the counties really ramped up their forest management practices. So just some statistics for you. All 15 counties manage approximately 2.7 million total acres. 2 million of these acres are classified as commercial forest land, meaning that timber can be grown to dimensions that meet mill requirements in a reasonable time period. 1,437,000 commercial forest acres are certified by Forest Stewardship Credit, FSC Forest Stewardship Council, or by SFI Sustainable Forestry Initiative. And Forrest talked about certification a little bit earlier, and it's very important to us to make sure we are managing our forests sustainably. We are audited by third parties that look at our programs, look at our documentation, look at our sites on the ground, and they are very good at making us practice sustainable, or make sure that we are following what we're saying, we're practicing sustainable forest management procedures. The county land departments do not receive funding from county levies. We are an enterprise system. We generate revenue from the sale of timber, from the sale of land, sale of gravel. In our case, we have peat leases, gravel leases, so we pay our own way, if you will, based on the management of our natural resources. Our harvest levels are based on scientific sustainable data. Each county has an individual forest management plan, and I guess our best estimate of the number of employees that are working through the land departments for all 15 counties is 147. Again, these are state-owned lands that are held in trust for the taxing districts. Minnesota Statute 282 governs all of our activities. Once I mentioned that we actively sell timber, we sell gravel, we sell all the resources. Once we have paid our own way, if you will, then the net proceeds are apportioned by statute to the local taxing districts. And Again, net proceeds after we pay our rate, the county board may set aside 30% for timber development. County boards may set aside no more than 20% for recreation or economic development. And then the remaining balance, this is very important, goes back to the local taxing districts. 40% to the county general funds, 40% to the city district, and 20% to the local township. All of our forest management programs follow the forest management guidelines in terms of wildlife, riparian management, forest roads, cultural resources, aesthetics, and recreation. Okay, so just some numbers for you. The MACLC, our average, the total timberland acres is about 2 million acres.
I'll follow up with Mark on this slide. So annually, the Associated County Land Commissioners tracks the timber volumes and acres we harvest each year. So this graph in front of you is a five-year rolling graph. For the five-year period from 2011 through 2015, we've harvested or regenerated 29,900 acres, roughly 30,000 acres of the 2 million. Some intermediate treatments, and that would include timber thinning of pine plantations, maybe group selections in our hardwood stands, about 7,800 acres. And then also other acres treated for a total of 37,600 acres that we've treated in that five-year period. Off those 5 years, or those acres, over the five-year period, we have averaged 726,000 cords of wood for that five-year period coming off of the 15 county lands. Our average cords per acre that we generate off of the county lands, 19.3 cords per acre across all species. So as far as said, our forest mirror theirs as far as the makeup between aspen, birch being the majority, and then right on down the line. That's why we have the shotgun pattern ownership. We're looking at about a total of 1.8% of our commercial forest land is treated every year, either through a final harvest or an intermediate harvest. And if you spread that out over cords harvested per acre across all of ours, across 2.7 million acres, we're cutting roughly about a third of a cord an acre per year off of all those weighted over all the acres. The next graph, just shows you a year-by-year breakdown of the acres, of the cords we've harvested. So you can see prior to the housing bust of 2006, we were averaging just under 10,000 cords per year. With the decline,
just a second. If you do have a cell phone close to the mics, if you'd want to pull them back a little bit, thank you.
I'm sorry.
No, I wasn't necessarily talking to you. I was talking to everybody here. So you're not to blame. You're doing a good job. All right. Why don't you continue?
Okay, turned it off. I'm sorry. So, anyways, as you can all see, in 2006, 2007, that was about the time that the markets crashed. And we started seeing mills start to shutter their plants. We were approached by industry to, hey, can you guys ramp it up? And in 2008, 2009, even with declining prices, the counties came through and ramped up by 100,000 cords, the amount of wood we offered to the mills. That made up for a discrepancy coming off the private lands that Forest had showed you all earlier. So the next graph, again, is showing that instead of cords, we're showing how many acres we've treated annually since 2006. And you can see 2006, 2007, just around 30,000 acres per year is what we treat. Since then, we've ramped it up, and we're hitting about 35 to 37,000 acres every year that we're either performing a final harvest or an intermediate treatment on. The next one is just a pie graph that everybody likes to see. You can see that of all of our commercial forest acres, we're just under 2%. Of treatment every year on our forest lands.
So, as Forrest was saying, we have similar management challenges, if you will, on the state tax forfeited lands as on the DNR lands. Declining birch stands, increasing deer herd and deer browse issues, emerald ash borer, spruce budworm, declining ash, changes in the industry. You know, some good news that we're looking forward to is perhaps the expansion of the LP mill, which will be very beneficial to several of the northern counties in terms of wood utilization. Public relations, there's a lot of different, our lands are multiple use, but a lot of different pressures on the land, from dog sledders to ski trails to ATV trails. And we are working with user groups, recreationists, to try and make room for all of these multiple uses.
Rep. Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question would be, or statement, my understanding is you're working with St. Louis County Commissioners to increase some of the percentage. I just see we have the largest in St. Louis County amount of timberland available and one of the lower percentages being used. And so is that the case? Is there currently work going on with the county commissioners to increase the harvesting that we're doing?
Mr. Weber?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, our county board and county administrator is very aware that there may be an increased demand for timber throughout all the counties and in St. Louis County. So we're working at updating our inventory, revising our modeling to see what that number is that we can be managing sustainably.
Representative Metza?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is there anything we can do from a state level to provide resources? I know LP was just mentioned, and that is a major concern for many folks in the region, that if there aren't enough cords available, that it'd be great to see as much of that get done on the front end. And so if there are any resources, and you could hit me offline on that, set up a meeting or something. But if we can do anything to help from a state level, I'd be willing to work on that with you.
Mr. Weber?
I appreciate, Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate that. I believe there are some things that we've worked together on. As I mentioned, our inventories are, many of the county's inventories are dated, and we need to update that information in order to ensure that we are managing sustainably, and so we know what that number is, that allowable cut. So any assistance with funding to maintain our county inventories, funding to maintain our county forest road infrastructure, any help along those, the access issues would be very beneficial also.
Yeah, and then also, Mr. Chair, Representative Metza, another thing that would really help out the counties is there is some language in Minnesota Chapter 282 that limit the ability to market wood. For example, there is one statute in there that has a $3,000 cap for an over-the-counter sale. And where we use these is where there may be a small point of county land that butts up to a private quarter section or whatever, where we might have 10 acres of land and the rest of it surrounded by swamp. Right now, Minnesota statute allows us only a $3,000 cap to sell to that logger that piece of wood. We'll be approaching a body in the Capitol here sooner than later about changing that $3,000 cap to a $500 cap, or 500 cord cap, I apologize. And this will mirror what the DNR has in their over-the-counter sales. It gives us a little more flexibility because, honestly, right now, $3,000 probably buys you maybe 100 cords of wood if we're lucky.
Representative Metza?
No follow-up.
Sounds good. All right. Representative Sundin, and then to finish off your presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the both of you, I realize that both St. Louis County and Carleton County did vote to implement the half-cent sales tax for road use throughout the counties. I wonder if any of that money could apply to forest roads Why don't you bring that up with your county boards and let me know how it goes.
I think that might have been more of a statement than a question, so why don't you finish?
Looking forward to hearing back from the county board.
Sounds good. All right. Go ahead. Why don't you finish with your presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that really wraps it up.
All right.
The counties are doing a number of things to try and increase that volume acreage of wood that we are providing to industry through land exchanges and through working with the DNR and the Forest Service on just joint management efforts. So other than that, Greg, do you have any last comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I do not.
All right. Well, thank you very much. You win the prize for coming the furthest. I would reach there's a couple cans of Pepsi if you want to grab it for your drive home. Feel free to grab two if you like. It won't be missed. So with that, why don't we ask Dr. Kilgore, would you please join us at the presentation table? And and a banana if you guys want to. Feel free.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Kilgore. I'm a professor and the interim head of the Forest Resources Department over here on the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation. I want to just cover a few broad issues in the next 10 or 15 minutes. Before I do, just to let you know a little bit, I can't go without a little bit of a plug for our program. So the Forest Resources Department is a nationally known program for training foresters, natural resource professionals. One of the more recent reports rated us as the number one forestry program in the country. We are the only accredited forestry program in the state of Minnesota. We offer degrees, Bachelor of Science degrees in the traditional forest ecosystem management and conservation, people that are hired by Director Bowe and land commissioners. We also offer a degree in parks and protected areas management, as well as urban and community forestry. We also provide graduate education both at the Master of Science and PhD level in forest and natural resource management. So we have a experimental forest up in Cloquet, Minnesota, about 4,000 acres, as well as a research center on Fall Lake just north of Ely. But we are located on the St. Paul campus here about 6 miles away. Wanted to cover four issues that are kind of the big picture issues of what's happening in forestry and in forests in Minnesota. Talking about changes in the condition of our forest, talk a bit about our private forest lands. Director Bowe talked about some of the trends in the harvest. I want to cover a little bit of ground about why that's happening, talk about the competitiveness of our forest and our forest industry relative to our neighbors to the east, as well as some other more productive lands in the south, and then wrap up just by talking about some trends we're seeing in timber sales. So just the four big areas. The graph that you see here is a depiction of how our forests have changed in a very short period of time. Director Bull had mentioned our forest inventory program. This is a national program. We have data across all the states. This is for Minnesota only. And so what you can see from that graph, if you look on the screens in blue, that was our, we have six different age classes in 20-year increments. So 0 to 20, 21 to 40-year-old forests, 41 to 60, 61 to 80, et cetera. The blue graphs show what our forests looked like in the late 1970s. You can see a fairly large amount of younger age forests. Fast forward to our more recent inventory, 2011, and you can see that there have been some very important structural changes that have occurred. In short, we have really aged as a forest in the state. If you were to total up the amount of forest land that is now over 60 years old, that's over 4 million acres more than we had just 30 years ago. So we're seeing a real sea change in terms of the aging of our forest resources. This is across all ownership. We can break it down by major ownership types, but this is across all of the 17 million acres of Minnesota's forest land, which is about a third of the land area we have in the state. And I bring this to you because it's important not only for understanding the impacts on forest products and forest products industry in terms of the availability and the quality of the wood that these manufacturing systems need, but also because the habitat quality and the availability is a function of not only what's out there on the land, but the condition it's in. And for many of our forests, particularly our aspen forests, they are pioneer species. They don't do very well past 80 years of age, and so we start seeing stands declining. It also impacts the recreational opportunities, hunting, cross-country skiing, whatever. As we have this aging forest, it really is a remarkable change that we're seeing in a fairly short period of time. A lot of that is really driven by some of the trends that Director Bowe described recently with the decline in the harvest activity. That is our principal source of managing and our forest resource. Second issue I want to just briefly cover, and it just builds off of what Director Bowe talked about, which is our private forest land. You've seen this graph now twice. This is the third time. But it bears repeating that if you look at the different ownership types, and Minnesota is unique. You just heard from county land departments. They manage just under 3 million acres. There's one other state in the nation that has as much county forest land, not even as much county forest land, but has a significant amount of county forest land. That's Wisconsin. Minnesota, Wisconsin are unique in the sense that we have not only federal, state, but we have county, municipal forest land acreage in a large amount. They are a big player. But the private land is just a little under 50% of our total forest land area. They are owned and managed. When I talk about now the private, I'm not talking about industrial. I'm talking about people like you and I who might own 40, 80, 100 acres. Maybe you inherited it. We use it for hunting, fishing, maybe some timber harvesting. There are about 100 to 120,000 private forest landowners in Minnesota, depending on how you count a minimum acreage size. So we're not talking about a couple of land departments or a DNR. We're talking about over 100,000 of these people making independent decisions. And we've done a lot of research at the university and elsewhere about why these people own their land, why they do or do not manage their land. The slide that I'm showing you here, and this is a very consistent finding that we've had over the years. When we ask private landowners, why do you own your forest land, the lowest ranked reason consistently over the last 20 or 30 years that I've seen, and this is for Minnesota, but it is mirrored across the entire country, is timber production. They own it for other reasons, primarily recreation, a place to get away, a second seasonal residence. And while they do not state when they buy the land they're going to be managing it for timber, we do know that over time about half of the forest land that's privately held is at one time or another harvested commercially. So while it's not their intention, it's not their purpose, they end up, a lot of them, roughly half, will harvest their forest land over time. What are they concerned about? Forest health. You heard from Director Bowe and the two land commissioners that there are a number of important forest health concerns, emerald ash borer, invasive species. Wildfire is a growing concern, particularly as these forests are aging and we have biomass accumulating within the stand. So when these landowners do harvest, again, it's not typically their intention when they buy or inherit the land, but they ultimately do that. You can see that price signals, and that was reiterated by Director Bowe, is not the reason. It's not a driving force for why private lands are harvested. The price was right as a response, for example, was one of the lowest ranked responses our state's private landowners give us when we ask them why you harvested your stand. It's primarily because someone told them or they viewed or determined that their stand was mature. It could be turning into a decadent stand. It was falling apart. It could be some of the forests were starting to die, to tip over. Maybe they were told that by a neighbor or a consulting forester or a DNR forester. In any way, price is not a strong on compelling reason by why many of our private landowners are harvesting timber, but nonetheless, they do. I want to talk just a little bit about the competitiveness of our forests and our forest industries, and we have benefited from some, I think there have been now three benchmarking studies in the last 10 to 15 years in this state that looks at how Minnesota stacks up regionally. When I say regionally, the lake states of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, as well as some of our southern states that are more productive. And as you can imagine, living in a northern latitude, our forests don't grow nearly as fast as they do in the south. The table that I'm showing you here shows that in Minnesota, we grow about a third of a cord an acre a year. And you say, well, I don't know how to benchmark that. Compared to our neighbors to the east, you can see that we're substantially lower. They grow about a half a cord per acre per year. And compared to some of our southern states, we're at about a third of their growth rates. I say that because we are operating in a global marketplace in terms of the products that are produced from our forests. If we were to look at the potential productivity of our forests with full stocking, species on the right site, we're looking at over doubling what we are actually growing right now. And that's a function of an old forest. Just like humans, as we age, we slow down a bit. The same thing happens with forests. And right now we're not at 50% of our potential growth that exists. When we look at how much we grow each year and how much dies due to mortality, I guess what I would call your attention to in this table is that whether you're looking at the three states of the lake states or comparing them to the three southern states that we benchmark against, the annual mortality doesn't vary a lot. You can see they're all of the states are somewhere around 4 to 1. Georgia's a little bit over 5 million cords per year that dies. What's important to note is that our net annual growth in Minnesota really pales in comparison to our southern states and lags behind a number of our states in the lake states as well. So when you look at the net growth that exists, we're growing at a slower rate, but it's a bit larger than what we have in the annual mortality that we see each year in Minnesota. We did a little bit of work looking at, and this was through a consulting firm in Wisconsin, Steigerwald Land Services. This is their data, looking at average haul distance. A haul distance is from a logging site to a processing mill. So it could be a logging site in Aiken County to the Grand Rapids UPM blended paper mill. In the Lake States, we see that they have the longest haul distances, whether it's conifer or hardwoods compared to the three other regions of the country, the northeast states, the south, and the Pacific Northwest. And that does have an impact on the number of hauls loads that a logging firm can make a day to a mill. This same firm recently conducted a study. This is not my data. This is their data, and it's quite interesting data. You don't see this very often. But they did a national benchmarking study a couple of years ago that looks at the different costs in delivering a load of wood to a mill. And so just let me explain what this graph consists of. There are five major costs. There's a harvesting cost, so the cost of cutting down, removing the trees, bucking them up, removing the limbs, etc. There's a transportation cost, that's the next one on each one of these bar charts that's in orange. There's a stumpage cost, that's the fee associated with purchasing the standing timber from the landowner. Then there is I'd say probably a turquoise looking color. There is a handling cost, that's what they call other, so that could be a handling, intermediate landing of logs, sorting, etc. And then there's a profit margin. I guess I wouldn't get too hung up in the details. Other than that, we can see that the vast majority of our cost for delivering wood to the mill is transportation, harvest, and stumpage. And you heard from Director Bowe that rising costs are a concern. So kind of those are the three major components. The other takeaway from this graph is if you look at the lake states relative to the other regions of the country, we're high costs. The northeast and the lake states are pretty much similar, and if I showed you this graph for hardwoods, this is for conifers, it would look pretty similar, a bit nuanced differences, but the lake states are consistently one of the higher cost areas to procure, process, and deliver wood to a consuming mill. The last slide and the last topic I want to cover is just some information that we have collected in some of our research over the years. And this is some data that we collected, again, from the lake states, so Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. We surveyed all the public foresters that work for federal, state, and counties in those three states and the logging operations. And this is what they told us a couple of years ago. We wanted to benchmark what conditions were like in 1995 and then about 15 years later and ask them to tell us what's going on. And a couple things that I would take away from this slide. One is that, for the most part, loggers and foresters see the same general trends that are occurring on our logging operations. You can see the first column next to the timber sale characteristic is the impact that has on profit. So, for example, high-quality wood would have an impact on increasing the profit of the logging operation. Proximity to markets or closeness to markets also. You can see that for the agreement among loggers and foresters is that we don't have as many long contracts for harvesting wood. Typically, they're about 3 years now. Depends. If you have a salvage sale, it would likely be much less than that. There were five-year contracts here back 10 years ago. I don't think they're used very often anymore. Loggers can get extensions. But overall, the trend, by as perceived by both the loggers and the foresters, they're less lengthy. The quality of the wood that they're cutting and the foresters say they're selling is less than it was 15 years ago. They're further away from markets. There are more restrictions on harvesting, and that it really is just a reflection of society and the importance of protecting a lot of the other non-timber resource values like water quality and wildlife habitat. Access difficulty, both loggers and foresters are saying it's becoming more difficult. For example, we know that land is being fragmented into different, more ownerships. We call that parcelization. So if a logger has to cross, had to cross one private land piece, let's say, to get at some public, some state timber, they may have to cross three of those private pieces now because that 100-acre parcel may have been split up into three different pieces. So just to point out that what the loggers and the foresters are seeing are things that really do not bode well in many cases for the profitability. And again, I want to emphasize we do operate in a global environment in terms of the wood products that are produced in this state. So just to summarize, and then I will turn it over to our next speaker, is that, as indicated, Minnesota's forests are aging, and those that aging is happening rapidly, and it does have implications for timber supply, habitat, recreational opportunities. Our private forest owners are the largest segment of ownership of forest land in the state. They are not driven largely by economic forces, but yet they do harvest timber over time. Our industry and our forests are competitively disadvantaged, as we talked about, relative to our neighbors to the east, as well as other wood-producing regions of the country. And both loggers and foresters are agreeing that a number of the trends that they're seeing over the last 15 or so years are negatively impacting logging profitability. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that's a very short summary. We could go on and talk about other issues, but I thought those were some of the four big ones that this committee might be interested in hearing.
Well, thank you, Dr. Kilgore. We do have one question. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kilgore, this is not really a question, just kind of a request at some point. I know the University of Minnesota does some excellent research work up at the NRRI up in Duluth, and I'm just wondering if they're looking at peat resources as well as, you know, the timber resources. I know we have 7 million acres of peat in the state of Minnesota, and are we looking at doing research and capitalizing on some of that peat that we have?
Dr. Kilgore and Representative Sundin, that's a great question. I don't have a direct affiliation with NRRI. They are part of the University of Minnesota. They are not part of our college. I do know anecdotally that they have done research, and I believe they still continue to do research on peatlands, peatland utilization. But beyond that, I really couldn't comment.
Representative Sundin?
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if we could address that in this committee at some point.
I think we'll be taking a look at it.
Thank you.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Brand, if you want to come down, introduce yourself, and let us know where you're from. And we're doing great on time. Thank you, Dr. Kilgore, for being super timely. So.
All right, good morning. I guess I'll do the track show performance here, although some of my slides are repetitive with the previous. My name is Wayne Brandt. I'm Executive Vice President of Minnesota Forest Industries and the Minnesota Timber Producers Association. The first slide shows some of what our products end up as that you might see and has logos for various of our members. Minnesota Timber Producers Association was formed in 1937. Loggers, small sawmills, allied businesses, truckers, etc. from around the state. Minnesota Forest Industries, primary manufacturers, large landowners. Our staff includes myself, Ray Higgins, who's at our office in Duluth today, and Deanne Stish, who's here every day, also lobbies for us. This is a list of companies that are members of Minnesota Forest Industries. Shows where they're located, the number of employees they have, and the products that they make. We have a diversity of products. The bulk are paper products, then oriented strand board, lumber, pallets, utility poles. I have members in southeastern Minnesota that make barrel staves, some that make shims, and a whole host of other things. This is a map that shows where we have members in the state. Question earlier about the resource in southeastern Minnesota. That, too, is important to us. We have a number of sawmills and loggers that are members of the Timber Producers Association and all the way down through the forested area of the state and into some of the areas that folks may not traditionally think of as timber country. This is repetitive with Director Bowe's slide, just as value of sales and wages and employment. I won't go over that. The next three slides, I'm going to talk a bit during the course of this on costs and the squeeze that we're kind of in right now. So what this graph shows is the costs that are associated with producing paper. These are averages that have been developed. You can see that for producing paper, it's roughly 25% energy, primarily electricity, 25% wood, 25% labor, and 25% everything else. So amongst the things that you all deal with here, energy and the forest resource are very important to us. You'll see as you move on to oriented strand board that the cost of wood as a percentage increases and the cost of some of the other items goes down, labor remains relatively the same. And similarly, when you go to producing lumber, the logs become even a larger proportion of that cost with human capital labor remaining about the same. For our industry, every job in a paper mill creates about 3.5 to 4.5 additional jobs outside of the mill. For sawmill or OSB plants, that's 1.5 to 2 jobs. We're big industrial drivers. University of Minnesota Duluth did an analysis when Boise shut down, then Boise, now PCA, shut down a couple of paper mills, paper machines a few years back. The cost to the economy of the state was $750 million a year. That's just two little old machines. Again, direct and primary and indirect, 28,000 direct employees, another 36,000 indirect and induced. State revenues, we pay the state about $21 million a year for harvesting the trees that the public owns on state lands. About the same on county lands, a little less, the volume's a little less off of county lands. For the state lands, about half of that is generated on permanent school trust fund lands. For every FTE, every person that you authorize the or provide funding for the Division of Forestry to have, if they are in the timber program, each one of them generates about $250,000 in revenues to the state. For every dollar that's spent on stumpage, so if we pay the state or a private landowner a dollar for stumpage, about $41 in economic activity is generated that from that as it moves from the woods to the mill and out to finished products. There are a number of related organizations and entities and structures in the state. Director Bowe and Commissioner Weber spoke about the certification programs, both SFI and FSC. We also have now in its 22nd year of the Minnesota Logger Education Program, which provides training on an ongoing basis to our timber harvesting professionals in the state. About 95% of the wood that's harvested is harvested by loggers that have completed and are current in that training, and the annual training requirements in terms of the number of hours actually exceeds, and we're very proud of this, the number required for attorneys. So if you're going to be a logger, you're going to spend more time keeping up your schooling than if you're an attorney. We think that's important. They also run the Minnesota, I'm not an attorney, in case you were wondering. They also run the Master Logger Certification Program, which has an auditing component. Then there's the Minnesota Forest Resources Council, established in state statute, Chapter 89A, that Director Bo referenced. And as part of that, there is the Interagency Information Cooperative, housed as part of Dr. Kilgore's program, also created in state statute. That provides technical advice to county land departments, landowners, and others. So it helps them with modeling and analysis and other of the important technologies. I won't belabor the Forest Resources Council. This is a graph similar to ones that have been up previously, I think to Representative Uglum's question. If you look on the bottom, you'll see the industrial harvest is broken out. It's the purple line at the bottom. So those are off of Malpas, UPM, Blandon, and Potlatch lands. Been very consistent through the years. Again, I talked about costs, and it's not within the jurisdiction of this committee, but it's been a big issue for us over the last several years. You can see, going back to 2002, when we first started doing some of the benchmarking studies on competitiveness that Dr. Kilgore referenced, Minnesota used to have a pretty significant competitive advantage in commercial and industrial electrical rates. This just compares a few timber states from the region, from the south and from the west to us. You can see that that has been lost over time through the years, and that's very important as we compete in the markets for our finished products. So what do those markets for our finished products look like? This shows the past decade, and I've got three slides on three different paper grades that comprise what we make. So this is for coated free sheet paper, which is made at in Minnesota at Sappy Fine Paper in Representative Sundin's district. You can see in each of these graphs tells basically the same story. Demand has continued to erode for paper here and worldwide. And yet the price that we receive, this is not adjusted for inflation. These are the actual dollars. We're getting the same as we got 10 years ago. So any kind of cost pressures are debilitating to us. Second graph for coated mechanical, that would be the grade of paper that's made at Verso in Duluth and at UPM Blandon in Representative Lehman's district. Same story. You know, we anticipate that these demand figures will level out at some point. We are not at that point. Again, the price received for the product, the same as it was a decade ago. For uncoated free sheet, which is what Representative Eklund produces in International Falls during his day job, since this is, I don't know if this is a hobby, this legislative thing, or how we want to characterize it, but it's the same story, you know. Same story, demand, you know, has continued to soften, and yet the finished price is the same. I don't have that kind of a chart for lumber or OSB, but this shows residential housing starts in the U.S. Over the past 15 years. That's what drives the OSB and the lumber markets. You can see with the housing crash and the recession, we went from over 2 million starts in the U.S. down to a little over 500,000. It has rebounded. And what we've seen in those markets is the big competition in those markets is Canada and the U.S. South and Southeast. So with Canada, with the Canadian dollar, the weakness of that at I don't know, Representative Eklund, 75 cents a dollar, 80 cents a dollar right now. And the expiration of the softwood lumber agreement, we're under intense pressure for lumber from Canada. And what we're seeing in OSB is kind of a stair-step recovery. So housing starts to go up a little bit. For those that survived, they add a shift or they open a plant that they closed. Those prices dive again until the demand catches up, and then they make some money, and then they start up some more capacity. So we haven't hit an equilibrium point yet on lumber or OSB.
Just a quick question, Mr. Brandt. Kind of on that cost structure, obviously, from a paper standpoint versus an OSB standpoint, you know, the margins are essentially, you know, if you're getting the same price you got 10 years ago, obviously the margins are just getting squeezed, and your ability to kind of buffet some of those ups and downs. Kind of what are you seeing? I mean, have you talked to industry partners north of the border? You know, what kind of issues? Obviously, some of the energy there, more hydroelectric, so they have a little locked in, steady. You know, what is that kind of the energy prices? Has that been kind of the primary driver in changes? Or
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you know, as a competitor, Canada has an entirely different situation. You know, they manage their economy to promote job growth, whether it's how they provide wood, which is not a competitive marketplace. We buy our wood at auction. They have a much more robust industrial policy of supporting jobs than the U.S. Has had. They will provide discounted electrical rates, discounted wood, if you will, to keep mills operating.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wayne, one thing you didn't mention is some diversification that's occurring, particularly at the Potlatch or the Sappy plant in Cloquet, where they produce a product that's shipped over to China. It comes back in the form of sweaters and cozies and that type of thing. Is there anything else on the forefront, you know, as far as new uses for the wood products?
Mr. Chairman, what Representative Sundin refers to is Sappy and Cloquet invested about $170 million 3 years ago to convert their pulp mill from making craft pulp, which can only be made into paper, into making specialized cellulose, essentially a more refined cellulosic product. So that then is chipped to other manufacturers. It is converted into rayon, which comes back as clothes. Many of our cell phone screens are made out of cellulose. You can produce virtually anything out of a cellulose molecule that you can produce out of a petroleum molecule. That's clearly part of the future. The Cloquet investment was one of the first steps we've seen in Minnesota, and you know, we think that that's going to be important to us. But if we're going to keep making paper, we're going to keep making lumber and OSB, and we got to be competitive with that to attract those investments here. This next graph shows what we've seen, and this is just aspen stumpage, but it would apply to the other species. So this goes back to 2000. You can see there was a significant run-up in those stumpage prices in 04, 05, 06, and then it went down. It went down because one-third of the industrial demand closed its doors permanently in this state. You'll see that we are in a marketplace again where we are on the upswing, and it's going pretty significantly, and that causes us great concern about our competitive position. This is a list of the mill closures in Minnesota over the last 15 years. That stumpage run-up particularly drove the closure at Weyerhaeuser and Deerwood, the Ainsworth closures in Grand Rapids, Cook, and Bemidji, and was a significant factor in the other closures. So there are a few things that we're going to want to be visiting with you about further as we go into the legislative session. We had some questions on road maintenance. Frankly, the DNR has an unmet need of about $2 million a year for graveling, grading, daylighting, those types of things. These are not bondable expenses. The legislature 2 years ago appropriated $500,000 that was not put in the tails for that activity. We think that that's very important for access for summer wood, but also for access for all of the recreational activities. Director Bo mentioned about 90% of that work is outdoor recreation, or traffic on forest roads is outdoor recreation. Similarly, the counties have a $3 million per biennium. These are biennial figures on MET maintenance need for those kinds of activities. I looked through the governor's budget proposal last night. I don't believe there's any funding proposed for road maintenance. DNR's inventory, they're currently on about a 25-year cycle. They should be on a 15-year cycle. That's about a $2 million item, also not in the governor's proposal. And that's really a government efficiency activity. About 25% of the time that DNR foresters go to their list and go to the woods to look at the stands, it's something other than what's on their inventory. So we think that there needs to be more investment, get that down to a 15-year cycle so we're not wasting 25% of those trips. Reforestation funding from bonding, FMIA and the general fund are important. Roads and bridges, the bondable portion, primarily reconstruction and bridge replacement. There is the governor proposed $3.4 million for that. On the private landowning side, obviously the funding for expanding, maintaining the expansion and getting the DNR back into helping with that is important. In the tax area, the vetoed tax bill from last year contained a reform of the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act. That's very important to keep private lands in forested condition and to provide some help for them to sustainably manage those lands. There are several policy issues that we're working with the department on that we'll have more to talk about later. And then finally, to the Good Neighbor Authority question, we think there may need to be some authority for the DNR to expend some dollars out of the Forest Management Investment Account to front-end those costs on a one-time basis, and then they would get reimbursed from the stumpage revenues generated off of those sales. So I don't think my track shoes have melted or caught on fire, but if there are any questions, I'd be happy to respond to them today or when I see you in the halls or in your offices.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Representative Metza?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Brandt, we can take it up at a different meeting just in regard for time, and I know you'll be back anyway. But I am kind of curious. I know we've worked together over my tenure in the legislature so far on a few what I think are really interesting forward-thinking projects, Sagettis, which unfortunately didn't pan out, and Sweetwater and Mountain Iron. And essentially, members, what those are is using the pulp and different chemicals you can get, and Method soap was an example, which you buy at Target, would have been getting the chemicals from forest products in the district. Again, that project didn't pan out. But there are huge opportunities to expand, which is why you'll kind of hear this corner significantly pushing for, you know, better relationships to get the products out to the end users so we can remain competitive on that global market that they're referring to while keeping a sustainable forest initiative. So.
Sounds good. Thank you, Representative Mess. Anything else? All right. Thank you, Mr. Brandt,
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For the good of the order. We are adjourned.